The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Welcome to Stone Cold Shows. I'm Brandon Strange alongside Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. Follow them on X at Polillo and at JoshJordan975 and read their work on sportsmap.com. If you're a Texans fan, the three of us are doing live reactions following every game this season for our Texans on Tap podcast. If you missed our breakdown of surprises and wild cards from the 53-man roster, you can find that over on our other YouTube channel, Sportsmap Texans, or in audio form wherever you get your podcast. Gents, little peek behind the curtain here. I use the same note document for the rundown from week to week. So I just kind of highlight the previous week and just delete it and start typing over it. Last week in the leadoff spot was pitching. And I'll be damned if it's not the same thing in my notes this week. Team ERA for Houston the past 30 days is the best in baseball, 2.54, and fifth overall now for the entire season. It's been a dramatic turn of events, given that they have basically an entire full rotation of starters still on the IL. We've talked at length about the gauntlet of teams that Houston has had to face over the past couple of weeks: Boston, Baltimore, Philly, KC. They go 8-6 over that period, and as of today's show, find themselves six games up in the West. They do it without Tucker still in the lineup and missing Bregman for a large chunk of those games. What has been the most impressive thing about how Houston has turned this pitching narrative on its head this season? And what's your playoff rotation if the playoffs started today?
Ooh, a lot to unpack, as they say. The metamorphosis of the rotation as individual components and then as a collective has been phenomenal, right? Ronel Blanco is only in the rotation starting the season because of injuries. He launches his season with a no-hitter and then is just sensational for the first two and a half months of the season. Well, over the bulk of that period of time, Hunter Brown pitched as if he belonged in the minor leagues. Upon his recall, for the most part, Spencer Arrighetti pitched, for the most part, as he belonged in the minor leagues. Yusei Kikuchi was pitching for the Toronto Blue Jays. Justin Verlander wasn't pitching much at all, and when he did, he was eh. Recently, he's not even eh, which is his own can of worms that we'll get to. Then you have Framber Valdez, who had a brief lull where it was, oh, here's soft between the ears Framber again, who for the last 2.5 months now, if not for Tarik Skubal, would be getting mentions in the Cy Young race in the American League. So taken individually, guys have had tails of two seasons, and then you combine it into one starting rotation, and it's just been remarkable. And obviously the well-documented statistics, the second lowest opposing batting average for a month in the history of Major League Baseball, what the Astros did in August, the entire sport batting 185 against the pitching staff. Side note, geek out moment, and only the Cleveland then Indians in 1968 had a lower opposition batting average. 1968 is the most feeble year of offense in the history of the game. Right, it was immediately after 1968 that they lowered the mound to give hitters more of a chance. The entire American League in 1968 hit 230. The Indians that year, their ERA for the month, where they had the opposing batting average lower than the Astros, their ERA for the month was 142. The Astros were 251 in August. But it's just been an amazing turnaround, dovetailing with Seattle essentially collapsing from before the All-Star break forward. And, you know, Yogi's most famous Yogiism is it ain't over until it's over. I just know that while the Astros are in Cincinnati, there's a rotund woman warming up her vocal cords in the Astros bullpen.
I like the sound of that. I mean, for me, Fromber's the biggest piece. Because you know, you asked the question, Brandon. I've heard a lot of people kicking this around. He's got to be your number one starter come the playoffs. He's pitching the best right now. He's got the pedigree. He's done it before. He's got the experience, so I know he can kind of scare you from time to time. But if you're the Astros, now there's a little wait and see, right? We'll see how Verlander pitches over the next couple of weeks as we lead into the postseason. But I think Fromber's got to be your number one. I think Hunter Brown's got to be in there as well. And it's tough with Arrigetti, right? It's a rookie. He's never had this experience before. Hunter Brown hasn't started a game, but he has pitched in the postseason, and he's been spectacular. Kikuchi, not a ton of experience there either. So if I'm leaning right now, I'm Fromber. If Verlander's pitching decent enough to make the rotation, I think because of the respect he commands, they'll probably put him in the number two spot, Hunter Brown number three. And then you're deciding, I think, between, you know, Kikuchi and Arrigetti after that. Yeah, I'd probably go Fromber, JV, Hunter Brown, Arrigetti at this point is probably how I'd line up at least my top four.
Varied factors to this. To amplify on Verlander, he's pitching for his supper. He has four starts left. Because the Astros are so loaded otherwise, Verlander does not belong on the playoff roster if he doesn't pick it up a lot. Four starts is what he'll have. Verlander's own words, not even close in terms of his mechanics. Right, his last two starts, terrible. His last couple starts, going back to before he went on the injured list, terrible. Add it all up, an ERA in the mid-fours. They just have too many better guys than Justin Verlander. Touched upon it a little bit last week. No career achievement award when you're talking about the 2024 Astros and what's in their best interests in the postseason. Now, when did the playoffs start for the Astros? They've surged to where there's a shot, though it's unlikely they get one of the top two seeds and the bye beyond the best of three wildcard round. If you're in a best of three, even less chance to futz around, and let's defer to Justin Verlander, surefire first ballot Hall of Famer. The hell with that, your postseason could be over in 2 days. So at this point, clearly Fromber one, equally clearly Hunter Brown two, and then it's who are you playing? And this holds also if you get to the American League Division Series, where it's a best of five, and no way do you need more than four starters. The Yankees this season have a losing record against left-handed starting pitchers. You say Kikuchi is pitching against the Yankees, especially at Yankee Stadium with their big left field, if you're in a best of five with the Yankees in a two versus three matchup in the second round. And a lot of this obviously is just perspective. But if you're facing Cleveland, the Guardians have obliterated left-handed starting pitching this season, starting this week 28-11 in games against left-handed starters. So the Astros will do their deep dives and play the matchup games, but strictly off quality. Obviously, Fromber one, Hunter Brown two, and then it's between Kikuchi and Arrigetti for the other two spots. Blanco pretty clearly is out of the mix, right? He's going to miss a couple of turns as the Astros go five-man rotation with a couple of off days mixed in within 8 days' time. And Verlander is on the clock, and especially if the Astros are in a best of three, if Verlander is not sensational over his last couple of starts of the regular season, I mean, kicking him to the curb might sound harsh, but kick away.
Especially when you look at just how brilliantly Spencer Arrigetti has pitched over the past month here. You really are cutting your nose off to spite your face if you're going to stick Verlander in the rotation for legacy reasons, as opposed to who are your best pitchers at that moment. But like Josh said, you know, we have to see what Verlander looks like as he ramps back up. I mean, given his track record, there is a high likelihood that Verlander could be a very, very good option for you. And then the decision-making becomes that much more difficult. Those are good decisions to have if you're a team that's looking to get back to that eighth straight ALCS.
Well, Verlander's next start should be this weekend against the Arizona Diamondbacks, who lead Major League Baseball in runs scored. So tick-tock on JV.
You know, another one of these retreads on my rundown is the breakout season of Yiner Diaz. For August, he hit .304 with a .482 slug and an .815 OPS with 15 RBI. And that's down from his July numbers. So that just speaks to the sustained success that Yiner has had this season, given that he's had that success and protecting Yordan especially. And now that Tucker's return is looking imminent, we're going to talk about that a little bit more at length. But given that all these things are happening, you've got, you know, Yiner protecting Yordan and Tucker's looking to return here by the end of the week. Do you think maybe Joe Espada splits up Yordan and Tucker in the lineup and uses Yiner in the middle of Yordan and Tucker and splits up the lefties a la the way that Dusty used to?
I think that will be the initial thought. And then it's how quickly does Tucker ramp up, right? How does he look? 3 weeks is plenty of time, right? Pitchers need time to build up and find their rhythm and a starting pitcher to lengthen out. Hitters hit. If they're healthy, they hit. Mookie Betts missed almost 2 months, came back and homered his first game back and had multi-hit games, two of his first three games back with the Dodgers. Altuve last season, after he got his hand busted at the World Baseball Classic, didn't start a season until mid-May, started as if he hadn't missed anything. So Tucker, in terms of performance, I'm not saying he'll go back to 979 OPS level right away, but I would think if his legs are under him, Kyle Tucker should be all right. And then what you have to work with the lineup, do you still want Yordan in the two spot, right? Where way back at the start of the season, the spot is thinking was, I want my two best hitters up the most. Altuve one and Yordan two. Bregman's another variable in this, right? He surged for a while, then he cooled back off. Bregman for the season, his on-base percentage is .316. That is grossly inferior to Kyle Tucker. I just want my best guys up the most. Yordan destroys left-handed pitching. Tucker this season, not so much. But Altuve 1, Alvarez 2, Diaz 3, Tucker 4, Bregman 5, if they have everyone healthy and performing within what you'd consider their reasonable realm of ability level. That's how I'd be lining them up, 1 through 5. And then you have guys like Pena and Singleton down where they belong in the lineup near the end of it.
Yeah, that's the thing, the X factor. What Bregman are you going to get? How healthy is he going to get? Like Charlie said, you want Yordan hitting second or third. There's still just a lot up in the air. We don't know what Tucker's going to look like. So, you know, I'm kind of wait and see on what the batting order looks like. But, you know, Charlie kind of hit on it. It'd be nice to have 1 through 5 really stout to where, yeah, you're not having to hit Pena fourth in the lineup regularly. That's going to make a big difference for this club. But Yiner's turned into that guy. You want him up at the plate with guys on base. It kind of reminds me of when Yuli was just, I remember there was like at a point where he was hitting almost 500, like with the bases loaded, some ridiculous kind of number. So you see some of those flashes in Yiner, and Yiner's got even more power. So you want him up there with opportunities to drive runs in. And, you know, Bagwell brought something up on the broadcast the other day, and I've noticed it with Yiner. He likes to hit the ball the other way to right field when there's guys on base. He's not trying to hit it 500 feet and yank it down the left field line. When there's guys on base, he's just trying to slap it into the outfield and drive in a couple runs, which is something we've been harping on this club all year about, is they get a little too pool happy, especially in Minute Maid Park. And in those big situations, they start swinging at balls in the dirt and just trying too hard. I like Yiner's approach. Just if I get a fastball I can kind of handle, just slap it to right center, drive in a couple runs, and let's take the lead here. So, yeah, I want to see Yiner definitely down in that area, and we'll see with Bregman and Tucker, but it's just too early. We got 3 or 4 weeks here to figure it out, but Yiner has become that guy. There's no way around it.
It's Yiner Diaz standing between Yordan Alvarez and winning the Astros Triple Crown, right? Yordan has moved out front in batting average. Obviously, home runs is his. Yiner has him in runs batted in part because Yiner Diaz has just been magnificent this season with runners in scoring position. After an awful start, Yordan has picked it up, but he's nowhere near the league leaders with runners in scoring position. Yiner's in the top 10 in all Major League Baseball.
Josh, we've talked about it before. It's when Mauricio Dubon was at his best this season, when he's slapping balls the other way, you know, letting balls travel and going with them and sending them the other way. That's where a lot of pitchers are trying to pitch you because they're trying to prevent you from pulling. It's when Alex Bregman is at his best, he's using the opposite field. So Yiner being able to do it at this point in his career and understanding like what the job is. Conversely, it's the other way too, right? Is he's got a guy on third, he's looking to drive the ball in the outfield so that he can drive a run home. It's that situational hitting, and he's doing it at such a young age and early on in his career that really, really makes you think you have something special with Yiner. And you're absolutely right. At this point, truth serum in me, I'm not sure if I wouldn't say Yordan still, but yeah, Yiner's definitely one of those two guys who, if you've got guys on base, that's who you want at the plate. You feel like they're at least going to give Yiner something to hit, whereas Yordan, they're usually trying to pitch around him. This probably seems it's a good time to talk about this. Dana Brown's moves, so far this season. He advocated early for Ronel Blanco to be a starter. He signs Victor Caratini, who's been a big part of this lineup, claims Caleb Ort off waivers. Ort now has a 1.15 ERA with a 1.61 batting average against, trades for Kikuchi. We've talked about it. They've won every game that he started. He adds Ben Gamel, who's hitting 308 with an 822 OPS since he joined the club. I think that's just 12 games, so not like a big sample size. And probably just as important is addition by subtraction. Moved away from the Jose Abreu experiment, optioned Montero back down to AAA, and then doubles down on that decision on Montero by calling up Forrest Whitley when the roster expands. So I think it's a good time to circle back around to this, like considering the results and how they've been able to navigate through all these injuries and climb to where now they have that 6-game lead in the West. Has Dana Brown adequately silenced critics, in your opinion? Or does this just start all over again the offseason when he has to make all his decisions on outfield, third base, and starting pitching?
Well, it'll start over. That's the cycle. But he certainly silenced those who aren't lunatics in the Astros fan base. I will say that Gamel and Hayward were desperation signings. It finally got to where with Chaz McCormick, just enough already. Anybody else. So they signed the available veteran left-handed hitters, but they've gotten meaningful contributions in moments out of each of them already. But you mentioned Ort. Right? The Orioles could use him back in their bullpen right now. I X'd it out the other night. Anyone want Bloss, Loperfido, and Wagner back for Yusei Kikuchi, who at this point essentially is the difference between the Astros probably having a 3-game lead as opposed to a 6-game lead, the difference between having a shot at running down the Guardians and getting that bypass the wild card round and not, there are obviously the long-term potential ramifications of that trade, but that was a masterstroke move by Brown, adding Kikuchi to the 2024 Astros. So yeah, anyone that would say that Dana Brown's had a bad year as a general manager, I don't mean to be harsh, but anyone saying that's a blathering idiot. I guess that's harsh. Doesn't mean it's wrong.
No, I've been happy with Dana Brown for most of the year. He caught some criticism for not having all these pitchers at the beginning of the season when all the injuries were piling up. But I mean, look where they are now. They have the best pitching staff in baseball. So clearly, you know, he cleared that hurdle there. The one thing I kind of second guess, this happened the other day. There wasn't a lot of talk about it, but when there were some moves made, Brian King went down to the minor leagues for the Astros. And in my opinion, outside of Hader, he's your best left-handed pitcher out of that bullpen. But the problem is, you know, with Caleb Ferguson, he was out of options. So that's why they elected to go with King. So I'm surprised that he's still not with the club. I wonder if at some point he will rejoin the Astros. It's just at 2.05 ERA, pitched 23 games this year, a whip at 1 flat. And now you could point at Ferguson and be like, oh, he's so much worse. His ERA is 4.44. Well, that's not the whole story. You know, if you look at since joining the Astros, his ERA is 2.70. But as somebody that watches all the games with the eye test, I have a lot more confidence in King than I do Ferguson. So I wonder if that's an adjustment we see going forward here. But no, Dana Brown and having to navigate all the Bagwell stuff and Jim Crane and the behind the scenes and the Abreu disaster, Montero, Crane obviously wanting to hold on to guys that he paid a ton of money to. Dana's had a lot to deal with this year, and I think he's handled it with a lot of poise. I think he tries to tell us the truth. I listen to his interviews pretty much every week, and I know the Astros, a lot of disinformation about injuries, but you could tell Dana, he kind of tries to tell you without coming out and saying it. And then if we look right now, he projected a few weeks ago, he was hoping that Kyle Tucker would return to the club after Labor Day, maybe the first week of September. What are we hearing now? That he might play in this Red Series, that he could be available in the Diamondback Series. So sounds like Dana pretty much had that on the nose. So I give Dana a lot of credit. And I loved the hire when it happened. Remember, we didn't like a lot of the other options they were kicking around, Brad Ausmus and, you know, some other guys. So I like that Jim Crane went with experience. Dana Brown, great pedigree. So far, we like what he's done as far as the drafts. So we'll see. And that's going to really matter here pretty soon. If Bregman leaves, it's on you, Dana. How are you going to fill that third base spot? I think it might be Bryce Matthews, but I don't want to get ahead of myself here. But yeah, Dana Brown, I think he's done a brilliant job.
I'm going to surmise that Dana Brown was following marching orders, but he flat out spoke with forked tongue over the Tucker stuff. And it's disappointing. It's aggravating. It's insulting. It's condescending to fans and anyone else consuming outright baloney when uttered from any member of the organization. I mean, as recently as over the weekend, Dana Brown, well, no fracture there, and then forced to basically release a statement. And then Kyle Tucker says, oh yeah, a while back we discovered there was a fracture there. So to me, just silly power control. At the very latest, July 30th, 5 o'clock, there was no reason to BS about this other than we can BS, but they win, they win, they win, they win. So within Houston, in the end, generally speaking, that's all that matters if you're the fan base. But just the latest example where an injury is concerned, the Astros organizationally did not cover themselves with honor. But here they are heading to the playoffs, almost certainly for an eighth consecutive year. Can they make it eight consecutive ALCSs? And that's what you line up for. In telling the full, as yet unfinished tale of the 2024 Astros, needs to be included location, location, location. The American League West is the only division they'd be in position to win right now. Quite happily, that's the division they're in.
Yeah, and I want to be sure, too, that I reiterate that, or iterate, as you would say, Charlie, that Brown can only make the moves. The guys still have to perform, and obviously a lot of credit also goes to the Astros pitching coaches, because Josh, you call it the Astros car wash. Astros will acquire a guy, bring him in, and he will, in many cases, look better. You know, again, Dana gets to look that much better because he can acquire a Kikuchi and Trey, but because the coaching staff gives, you say, a new strategy on pitch usage, he looks that much better and looks like a brand new pitcher coming over from Toronto. So good on the organization. It's an organizational success. It's not just on Dana Brown, but Dana Brown has taken, as you said, a lot of bullets, whether fair or unfair, given the situation that he walked into. And I think right now, Brown is really distinguishing himself as a very smart general manager. We haven't covered all the decisions in this. Obviously, we're just doing the highlights. There were some misses, but that happens when you're bringing in like journeyman guys and veterans on teams. But for the most part, Brown's moves have been very positive. And I don't know that the dishonesty that we might see from Brown is his philosophy. It seems to be, it's an organizational philosophy, which we're going to talk about.
One quick thing, you brought that up. I think the car wash thing that we talked about, maybe that helps out Justin Verlander here a little bit, right? If they're helping all these other guys that haven't been Hall of Famers turn in some of their best performances, as Verlander gets a little healthier, the mechanics get a little more fluid, he gets back in the rhythm of things, maybe down the stretch we'll see that Verlander that we wanted to see. But I've just been hearing a lot of narrative about, oh, Justin Verlander's god awful in the postseason, so you don't want him. Well, the eye test tells you right now it's not quite there. And I mean, look how wild he was, but also a little blooper went in over first base. If that ball gets caught, he gets out of that game, five innings, two runs. It's not great, but it's not bad. You know, so there's a little things there, but just, you know, keep in mind, you know, Verlander, he's pitched 226 playoff innings in his career with a 3.58 ERA. And he was much better last year than he has been in recent years in the playoffs. So just something to keep in mind. It's not just a simple narrative that, oh, Justin Verlander equals terrible playoff pitching.
It's ignorance. Justin Verlander's had a terrible World Series career, finally got the win in Philadelphia in 22, but division series, league championship series, he's been stupendous over his career. So that's just dumb. But none of those 226 postseason innings were thrown when Justin Verlander was 41 years old. Yep. So that's the race against time to ramp up and be a guy worthy of being in the 2024 Houston Astros starting rotation.
Yeah, and on Verlander, you're right. He wasn't getting shelled against the Reds. It was just death by a thousand cuts, the majority of those being self-imposed. He was walking a lot of guys, which just goes to that point of he's just not back yet to 100%. He's working his way back. He's talked about how this is kind of his spring training to ramp up to where he needs to be. But the Astros need as many arms as they can get right now in the rotation to be able to give some of these guys breaks and be able to expand the roster out or the rotation out enough to cover these 18 consecutive games that they have here. And that's what we've said at the top of this conversation was we need to see Justin Verlander and what he looks like a couple of weeks from now before we make any hard decisions. But you'd much rather have a Verlander wild card in your hand than not.
40-year-old Justin Verlander in the playoffs last year, just quickly, against the Twins, 6 innings, no runs, 6 Ks. Rangers the first time, 6 2/3, 2 runs, 5 Ks. The final game against the Rangers last year, 5 2/3, 4 runs. Not as good. But just think about it like this. We know how historically great that Rangers offense was last year. And then they got to see Verlander twice in that series. Remember what happened when they got to see Christian Javier twice in that series. He couldn't get out of the first inning after a pretty good performance the first time around. So, you know, recency bias. Verlander wasn't great in that in his last start against the Rangers in the playoffs last year. But overall, he was pretty good.
So obviously the big news this week was the unsurprising revelation that Kyle Tucker did indeed suffer a fractured shin back in May. Charlie, I saw you. I know you were the most shocked. Actually, I saw you doing, as the kids say, touching the sign on Twitter. After the news broke, you retweeted your post from just a couple of weeks ago, predicting that this was going to be the eventuality, that we would eventually learn that Tucker did indeed have a fracture. Now, I've seen people on X asking, why does this matter? Well, one big reason is that this team has a questionable record of rushing guys back from injury. And this goes all the way back to the James Click era. And here we are with Tucker, still not running 100%. They're saying he's still not 100%. And yet they're already projecting a return date for him without any rehab starts. This is my weekly concern level question. What's your concern level that Kyle Tucker's being rushed back?
First off, thanks for hepping me up to the internet vernacular of touching the sign. Two fronts I want to address this on. One, just the disappointment that the Astros couldn't play straight arrow on this. In the run-up to the trade deadline, okay, if you wanted to keep your cards close to your vest so that other teams wouldn't say, oh, the Astros are desperate for an outfielder, Tucker's going to be out at least 3 months, that would have been sensible. But as soon as the trade deadline passed, there was zero potential competitive advantage to not being truthful with your fans foremost on this. So as it turns out, June 3rd is when he fouled the ball off the shin. September 3rd has arrived and not quite back, but getting close. And then there's the issue that you raised, Brandon, with, okay, are you nudging him back a little bit too soon? I just have to trust in how Tucker feels and the doctors. Right, if you come back too soon, you risk a full-blown fracture. That's it for Tucker. Would ruin his offseason heading into his walk free agency year. So I just think that Kyle Tucker, not out of selfishness, but out of sanity, he's not going to rush back. Of course, he wants to rejoin this team and knows the Astros are in the fight to maybe get back to and win another World Series. But he's not going to unduly jeopardize, I don't know, $250 million? At this point in doing so. So nothing's ever fail safe. We don't know yet exactly when the fracture was finally realized, other than it wasn't in the last 72 hours. So a lot of time has occurred since then, and Tucker's gone through the arduous process to where he's obviously not yet 100%, but is he playable and not undertaking unreasonable risk in fracturing that shin by coming back? I think it's as simple as cross your fingers.
For me, it looks like Tucker is getting better quickly. I remember the video Brian McTaggart shared a few weeks ago where he was taking some balls in the outfield. I mean, he looked like an old man out there. He could barely move around. And then just the other day, Chandler Rome shared a video of him running the bases, and he definitely looked better, but it didn't look like much more than a steady home run trot, like maybe a little quicker pace than that. He was just running from first to third, but I wasn't like, oh yeah, that looks full speed to me. So clearly I don't believe he's 100%, which it worries me a little bit, because they have, you know, Jake Myers and JP France, they've all these guys they've rushed back, and Chandler Ohm's written about it and how they were going to have some kind of, you know, report or some kind of investigation to see how they could get better at that. That's never really happened as far as we know. So I have some concerns, but on the positive side, it does look like he's getting better quickly. So I don't see the need to get him out there when he's obviously not 100% against the Reds just in a day or two. to me, it's too soon. The chance of a, you know, some kind of issue where he has a setback, it's not worth the risk right now. You're winning games. You're six games up in the division. I just also wonder if that has something to do with the Bregman injury. And are they rushing Tucker back because the Bregman deal is worse than they're letting on and telling us? Maybe. Bregman hasn't played the last four games. They came out and said that now the elbow issue is bothering his hitting as to where before it was throwing. That's not a good sign. So part of me, just because I can't really trust the Astros, it makes me start thinking the worst things, that, you know, maybe something's wrong with Bregman and they got to rush Tucker back to get another big bat in there. So we'll see. As far as perception wise, I will say this. I wouldn't say that the most informed people, but I heard a lot of people saying, oh, is Kyle Tucker just upset at the organization because, you know, they've gone through arbitration and, you know, he's lost and they haven't given him that long-term deal that he wants? Or is Kyle Tucker taking his sweet time to kind of stick it to him, which I certainly don't think that's the case. But that was the perception of some people in the fan base. So I think it's unfortunate that Tucker would get some of that put on him when now we find out it was a much worse injury than they were letting on. He should have been out for this amount of time. It makes sense that he's still not 100%. But the Astros were kind of letting that narrative kind of sit out there because it didn't really bother them any. If anything, it would make Tucker look maybe a little less valuable. So that was one of my takeaways. Maybe they kind of left Tucker out to dry there, kind of to wear that, when I don't know if that was really the right thing to do.
Alex Bregman has bone chips in that elbow and is going to need offseason surgery. Been there, done that. Of course, the Astros can't be honest about it because, unfortunately, it's just the Astros way. I mean, just phenomenal, beyond phenomenal run, right? The baseball operation for getting close to a full decade now. But just they bring disrepute upon themselves with too many off-field things. But, you know, whatevs. The kids still use whatevs. But Bregman's status up in the air is an issue because Kyle Tucker certainly is not going to play the outfield every day. So you can't DH Tucker and Bregman. And then there's Yordan, who you don't want in the outfield every day, certainly not on the road in bigger outfield subject to postseason matchups. So there's going to be juggling there. With Tucker, to me, at this point, obviously the play was wait until you get back home against Arizona. He'll only DH the first game back. Nevertheless, and while they're not the concrete AstroTurf surfaces we think of from the 70s and 80s, artificial surface in Cincinnati, you know, the turf except for the dirt cutouts, you get back to Minute Maid Park, dirt, grass, familiarity. That's the sensible way for Kyle Tucker to get back on the field. And then is it going to be every other day initially? You know, every second or third game he plays, he's in the outfield. I just don't see you throwing him in there full bore. And with the pickups of Gamel and Hayward, they're both at least average, if not above average, defenders in the outfield. So Tucker DHing, you're not trading down much defensively if Gamel or Hayward is in right field. But then that means Yordan has to be in left. And if Bregman's playing, he has to be at third.
Josh, I'm really glad you hit on that narrative about Tucker, because that is one of the byproducts of the team's lack of transparency. Is there was a loud vocal part of the fan base that was turning on Tucker, questioning him, because how could a bone bruise keep him out this long? Now, you can't, as a team, you can't account for the hyperbole of internet fandom, but I think a little bit of transparency does go a long way, especially in these situations. I don't think we've ever seen anything from Tucker to indicate that he's not a gamer. Again, that you allow for those narratives to develop in the vacuum of good information. You allow people to fill it in with their own theories. And that's not just isolated to sports. But we don't know where the genesis of this secretive philosophy comes from. Whether we know it's always been a mainstay of the Crane regime. We don't know whether that's Crane's philosophy or that was something that Lunau employed that Crane adopted. But we just know that this iteration of the team has been highly secretive and not forthcoming about health issues. I'll give you guys the final word of the domino effect of Tucker coming back and maybe Bregman's health status.
Well, if you have your big five in whatever order, Altuve, Alvarez, Diaz, Tucker, Bregman, you're happy to go with your lineup against the best in the league. Baltimore top to bottom, probably a little bit better. A healthy Minnesota, as if Correa is ever healthy and Royce Lewis stays healthy. But top to bottom, Minnesota, probably a little bit better. But the Astros have the goods to go make a run of winning the World Series. There's no question they have a roster capable of that. And it's not mandatory that they have both Tucker and Bregman for that to be the case. In a short series, the Astros can beat anybody else that they face. Of course, the flip side of the coin is 2 out of 3, 3 out of 5, and ultimately 4 out of 7. Anyone the Astros are going to face is going to be capable of beating the Astros. That is how postseason baseball works. And just for fun, I wanted to work this in before we get out, right? As the Astros, right, that they're going to overtake both the Yankees and Orioles. Very, very scarce hope of that happening. Cleveland is going to take the Guardians, faltering some. But remember, last three games of the season, Astros at Cleveland. Astros beat the Guardians 2 out of 3 here. So they go up there and take that series. They take the tiebreaker. If they sweep that series, well, you make up 3 of the 4 games right there. The Guardians do have a bunch of remaining home games after the 2 remaining road series, 3 at the White Sox to start next week. But this weekend, if you're an Astros fan, get ready to choke down your bile. It might make your head explode, but say it with me. Go Dodgers. Cleveland is at the Dodgers for 3 this weekend. If you want the Astros to have to be able to avoid the Russian roulette of a best of 3 to start the postseason, and then you don't have your pitching lined up to start the division series, the Dodgers taking down the Guardians at least 2 out of 3 this weekend would be very helpful to the Astros' cause. So if there's a critical spot in a game over the weekend, that's Joe Kelly's music coming in to face Jose Ramirez. Be thinking, go Joe. Go, Joe. Bah, no chance.
No chance. We hate that guy, Charlie, but I get it, my man.
It's business, Josh.
Yeah, you're right about that. I think just to wrap it up for me, I think the ripple effect, I think of Tucker coming back. And by the way, I mentioned the videos. I saw him running in the outfield and running around the bases. Not great, but I watched him hitting batting practice. Looked pretty good. I mean, he was hitting the ball hard. So as far as swinging the bat, I think Tucker can probably give you something pretty quick. That's got to be why the Astros are thinking about bringing him back right now, because they think he can do some damage with the bat. But one of the ripple effects is Altuve. We've been harping on this all season. If you can't get a chance to rest him a little bit, you can't really DH him much going forward with the Bregman injury. If Tucker's coming back and can't play right field regularly, you know, just something to keep in mind. Over the last 30 days, Peña has a higher OPS than Jose Altuve. Over the last 15 days, Altuve's hitting .229. So I think we're seeing some diminishing returns of Altuve being 34 and having to play as much as he's been playing. And you're just not seeing the Altuve that you really want, the one with that pop in the bat guy, just really hitting lots of home runs. And you're seeing him try to bunt a lot more often, stuff like that, which I get it. You're a leadoff hitter. You're trying to get on base, but it'd be nice to have that, you know, Altuve, old classic George Springer type guy at the top of your lineup where you're worried he's going to hit a home run every time he comes up to bat or every time he leads off a game. So Altuve is going to have to play a lot. And if Bregman's missing time, and Mauricio Dubon's having to play third base, which is going to keep Altuve out at second base more often. It doesn't feel like they trust Whitcomb at third after he's made some errors. We've seen them kind of go to Dubon lately. I think Altuve here, he may not quite be peak Altuve as we get into the playoffs, which that concerns me a little bit.
The point is irrefutable. 34-year-old middle infielders are not designed to play 155 games. Altuve's power is way down. His walk rate is down nearly 40%. He has blown to smithereens his career high in strikeouts. He's having his worst season, excepting the short COVID season, since before he became a superstar. He's still a good player, but an OPS in the 780s is not close to the OPS in the 900s he posted the last couple of seasons. The good news on this is once you get to the postseason, the liberal sprinkling of off days should take fatigue entirely off the table.
Jose Abreu from last year.
And also we talked about it with Bregman too, is like the numbers be damned in the postseason. It's about situational hitting. And you saw the Astros won the World Series with Altuve basically having an awful postseason in 2022. You don't want to count on that, but I think, the numbers be damned. You're going to see opposing teams and pitchers are still going to respect the hell out of Jose Altuve up at the plate because of what he can do. We just saw that with the walk-off double in the series against the Royals. So guy still has a flair for the dramatic. I wouldn't want to face him in a big critical situation. Good thing is there's still time for him to get back into rhythm before the postseason gets here. but as Charlie would say, TikTok. That's going to be it for this episode of Stone Cold Shows. If you listen on podcasts at places like Apple or Spotify and you enjoy the show, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating. Charlie, Josh, and I will catch you next week, but you don't have to wait that long to get your Houston sports picks because all you have to do is subscribe to this channel, Sports Map Houston and Sports Map Texans on YouTube. We'll have more content during the week, including a preview of Texans Colts that drops on Thursday over on Sports Map Texans. Thanks for listening. Until next time, go Astros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.